Hey everyone, and welcome to the show. You know, it feels like these days things are changing faster than ever, and honestly, it can be so overwhelming to try and keep up.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really can feel like you're barely keeping your head above water sometimes just trying to keep up.
But what if instead of just struggling to stay afloat, we could actually learn to harness that constant change and use it to propel us forward to create a better future?
Well, that's exactly what we're diving into today as we explore the world of personal and professional development, and specifically how to not only cope with change, but actually master it. And if you're ready to ride that wave of change with us, hit that like button and subscribe so you don't miss out on future deep dives just like this one.
Absolutely. We're going to be unpacking Adapt, Mastering Change in 4 Steps by Andrea Clark. And you can find a link to that on Amazon down in the description. But this isn't just your typical how to react to change kind of book. This goes way deeper. It's really about learning to proactively shape your path forward and finding a new sense of stability amidst all that transformation.
Yeah,
exactly. And in this deep dive, we're going to be pulling out those key insights from Andrea's book and really focusing on the practical things you can actually do to build your own adaptability, both personally and professionally. We'll be looking at some real-world examples and frameworks that are going to help you move beyond just reacting to events and instead really engage with this ever-present nature of change.
Sounds good.
So let's jump right in. The book kicks things off with this concept of chopping down trees.
Oh, yeah. This is a great metaphor. It's so simple, but it really captures this feeling that I think so many of us experience on a daily basis. Think about it. You're constantly bombarded with urgent tasks, right? Mm-hmm. Emails, meetings, unexpected problems pop up.
Right. Like putting out fires all the time.
Exactly. And that's that chopping down trees part. It's the crucial work that's got to get done. It's keeping everything running. But the book really highlights this point that if that's all you're ever focused on, if that's all you're doing, eventually you'll run out of forest. Like you might be solving today's problems, but you're not investing in tomorrow.
Mm. Yeah. You get that feeling of just being really busy, but not making any real progress towards your bigger goals, right?
Yeah.
I know I've definitely had weeks like that where I'm just running from one thing to the next. And at the end, I look back and I'm like, wait, what did I actually do for my future this week?
Exactly. And, you know, most people, they get it intellectually right. They understand that future-oriented thinking is important, that you need to, like, plant seeds for tomorrow.
Right.
But then reality hits, doesn't it? Your inbox explodes. There are deadlines all of a sudden. And those longer-term things get pushed aside. And the book points out that the most common reason people give for not focusing on the future is, I don't have time.
Yeah, it's this constant battle between what's urgent versus what's actually important.
It is. And the book makes this really important distinction between future-proofing and firefighting.
Right.
Yeah.
So can you unpack that a little bit for us? What does that actually mean?
So firefighting is that reactive mode, right? You're just constantly chopping down those trees as they fall. But future-proofing is about proactively investing your time and energy into those things that will pay off down the road, like identifying that fertile ground and planting those seeds strategically. The book even asks this really interesting question. What if you actually chopped down fewer trees today? Would anyone even notice? And if the answer is no, it might be a sign that you're over-investing in the immediate and neglecting the long-term health of your forest, so to speak.
That's a really interesting way to look at it. So how do we actually start making that shift from constantly reacting to actually shaping our future?
Right.
Well, the book lays out these 4 core principles of adaptability as kind of a roadmap. Engage, accept, activate, and release.
Right. And those 4 principles, they're really the foundation for this book's approach to mastering change. And they're not abstract theories. They're presented as very practical steps that you can take to become more adaptable.
Okay.
So we'll go through each of those in detail, but starting with that first principle, engage with the signals of change.
And I think that Titanic's story is a really powerful illustration of what can happen when we fail to heed those early warnings, even though it is such a tragic event.
It's a sobering example for sure. And the book goes into how the Titanic received numerous warnings throughout the day on April 14, 1912, about icebergs in its path. There were at least 7 different reports, and one even came from the SS Californian just 40 minutes before the collision, saying they were stopped and surrounded by ice.
I know, and it's just unbelievable that the wireless operator on the Titanic was so busy transmitting personal messages for wealthy passengers that he essentially dismissed those critical warnings as unimportant.
He was so focused on his immediate tasks that he literally missed the signals that could have saved lives. And, you know, as the book points out, while there were obviously other factors that contributed to the tragedy, that fundamental failure to listen to and act upon those clear warnings is just such a stark reminder of how important it is to be aware of what's happening around you.
Yeah, it's like being so caught up in our own little bubbles that we completely miss the crucial signs that something bigger is coming. It all comes down to that practice of looking up and out, doesn't it?
It does.
Really consciously observing what's happening beyond our immediate focus.
And the book explains that the forces of change are generally shaped by three things: drivers, signals, and trends.
Okay, so break those down for us a little bit. What's the difference between those three?
Okay, so think of it like trying to understand the weather. Drivers are those large-scale, often invisible forces that create the underlying conditions for change.
Okay.
So things like major shifts in technology, evolving social values, or demographic changes.
Got it.
Signals, on the other hand, are those early warning signs.
Okay.
Like those first dark clouds on the horizon or the first couple raindrops that might seem insignificant at first, but they indicate that something bigger is brewing. And then trends are the full-blown storm. Those recognizable patterns that are impossible to ignore, like a major shift in workplace culture or the emergence of a whole new industry standard.
So if we apply that to the Titanic, those missed signals were the specific iceberg warnings. The drivers could be things like the increasing volume of ship traffic in the North Atlantic during that time, and the presence of icebergs in that region during that particular season would be the trend that people knew about.
Exactly. And the book emphasizes that learning to pay attention to those signals of change is a crucial high IQ habit. That's adaptability quotient.
Okay.
It's about becoming your own personal futurist, essentially.
I like that.
Learning to recognize those seemingly small shifts that could lead to much bigger disruptions. And that awareness empowers you to become an active participant in shaping your response rather than just reacting to things as they happen.
So the book defines a signal of change as a surprising example of a small localized change that disrupts the status quo. And it gives us great examples of the lone schoolgirl's climate strike that went global and the tech CEO who suddenly declared work from anywhere as those powerful micro signals.
Yeah, those examples are great because they're very specific. Right. They point to a particular kind of change, and that makes them stand out from just the regular noise. And the book shares this really insightful anecdote from Andrea Clark herself that perfectly illustrates this whole signal superpower.
Yes. That moment when she instinctively reached for her smartphone to get the news, instead of buying her usual copy of the New York Times at the newsstand, for someone who had that routine for so long, that unconscious shift in behavior was a huge signal about the disruption that was coming for the entire news industry.
It was a perfect example because it was so specific.
Right.
It was a change in her own personal media consumption, and it really surprised her because she hadn't been thinking about doing that.
Right.
And realizing that this small shift, if it was happening on a larger scale, would completely change her career in journalism. It pushed her to start thinking about what she needed to do next.
And then there's the example of Netflix, which is such a great illustration of a company that really embraced those signals of change early on.
Oh, yeah. Netflix is a textbook example of how paying attention to those early signals can give you a huge advantage. So back in the mid-2000s, Netflix was primarily a DVD by mail rental service, right? But they started noticing a few key signals, like the fact that high-speed internet was becoming more and more common,
right,
which made streaming video much more feasible. Then there were shifts in content licensing agreements, changing consumer behavior, and people were wanting on-demand access to entertainment, and then a noticeable slowing of DVD sales.
And all those signals together pointed to a clear trend, the rise of online streaming.
Mm-hmm.
And Netflix, they were smart. They started experimenting with streaming as early as 2007, even while their DVD business was still doing really well. And that really put them ahead of the curve, didn't it?
It did. And there's even an anecdote in the book about a major bank in Asia that saw some early and pretty weak signals about a new coronavirus in December of 2019.
Wow.
And they made the decision to stop all staff travel well before it became a global pandemic.
Wow, that's incredible.
So, you know, those examples really show the real-world impact of this habit of scanning for signals of change. So for those of you listening, how can you actually start developing this habit in your own life? The book actually provides a really helpful framework for doing just that, doesn't it?
It does.
It lays out five specific steps you can take.
Yeah.
First, you want to define your focus areas. What aspects of your professional or personal life are most important to keep an eye on for potential changes? Second, identify reliable sources of information.
Right.
Where can you get those early insights? That might be industry publications, social media conversations with people from different backgrounds, even paying attention to movements that seem kind of fringe or unconventional at first. Third, schedule regular time for scanning. Make it a part of your routine. Don't let it get squeezed out by other things. Fourth, discuss the signals you're seeing with other people.
Yeah.
Get different perspectives, bounce ideas off each other. And finally, save and track the signals you identify in a place where you can easily access them.
Okay, so we're actively engaging with those signals. The next high EQ habit that the book delves into is to obsess over learning. And, you know, I think this is particularly relevant today with how quickly everything is evolving,
yeah.
especially for those of us who work with knowledge and information. The book shares that story about Anna, doesn't it?
It does.
The HR professional who, after years in a corporate role, realized her skills weren't quite as up to date when she tried to transition to freelance work.
Right.
And it really highlighted how important it is to constantly be learning and keeping your skills sharp when the world of work is changing so rapidly.
Yeah, and the book points to the rise of the freelance economy and the fact that a huge chunk of freelancers are providing knowledge-based services. And they approach learning with a real sense of urgency because they have to.
Right, they have to stay on top of things to stay competitive.
Exactly. And the book encourages everyone to adopt that freelancer mindset when it comes to learning, to have that inherent commitment to staying relevant and constantly looking for ways to add value. And then it asks a series of questions that are really designed to help you think about how your learning aligns with the changes that are happening and the overall strategy of your business or your career.
Questions like, what is fundamentally changing around you? Which forces you to really look at those big drivers of change and how they might impact your specific work.
Right.
And what is the overall strategy for your business or career? So making sure you're really clear on the direction you're headed.
Yeah.
And then, is your current learning plan really aligned with those things? Are you learning the right things to thrive in this changing environment?
And maybe even more importantly, what outdated skills, mindsets, or behaviors do you need to unlearn?
Right. Unlearning. That's such a crucial but often overlooked part of growth. It's about intentionally letting go of the things that are no longer serving us to make space for new and more relevant skills.
Absolutely. And the book gives a nice overview of the five main ways we learn: self-directed learning, classroom-based learning, peer-to-peer learning, learning by doing, and social learning. It encourages you to really think about which of those styles work best for you.
Right, because knowing how you learn best can make the whole process much more effective.
Exactly.
And enjoyable, too.
For sure.
And the book emphasizes this idea of learning always and in all ways. You know, almost every interaction we have can be a learning opportunity.
It's about being curious and constantly looking for ways to grow. And that leads to the third high IQ habit that supports engaging with change: propagating a 3D network.
I love that term, 3D network. It really paints this picture of a diverse and interconnected web of relationships.
It does.
And the book highlights how vital those connections are in giving us access to a wider range of ideas and perspectives.
Right. It uses this great analogy of mycorrhizal networks in forests, you know, where webs of fungi connect the roots of different plants.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And that allows them to communicate and share resources. Your network can function in a similar way, providing support, sharing knowledge, and making you more resilient.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
And yet the book points out that professional networks have actually shrunk since the pandemic.
Yeah.
You know, with less of those spontaneous conversations happening and fewer people going to in-person events. And that can unintentionally limit our exposure to new ideas.
It can, and it can make us less adaptable without us even realizing it. So the book asks a few really interesting questions to help you assess how diverse your network actually is.
Questions like, when was the last time someone in my network really disagreed with me about something important? Which is a great way to gauge whether you're surrounded by people who are comfortable challenging your assumptions.
Right.
And do I spend most of my professional time with people who have very similar jobs to me? So making sure you're not just stuck in an echo chamber.
Exactly. Those questions are designed to help you identify any blind spots in your network and encourage you to build a more diverse and resilient set of connections. So we've talked about engaging with those signals of change, the importance of learning, and having diverse networks. Now let's move on to the next principle, which is to accept what's changing.
Right.
And this one can be tough.
Yeah, it can be the most challenging one emotionally and mentally.
Yeah.
But I love how the book introduces the concept of the kintsugi mindset here. I think that's such a beautiful and insightful metaphor.
Oh, it is. Kintsugi is that Japanese art of repairing broken pottery with gold.
Right.
And the philosophy behind it is to treat those cracks and repairs not as flaws, but as part of the object's history and beauty.
Yeah.
So it's really about embracing imperfections and seeing the value in things that might be considered broken.
Exactly. And that could be physical objects or even personal setbacks.
Right. It's about shifting our perspective from seeing damage or imperfection as something negative to seeing it as part of our story. It's what makes us unique.
And the book talks about reframing as a key part of this acceptance.
Reframing is about making a conscious choice about how we interpret an experience.
Okay.
Whether it's something that's already happened or even a potential future situation. By choosing how we view it, we can literally change how we feel about it.
That's really powerful. And then there's this concept of the waiting place, which I think we've all been in at some point. It's that tendency to put things off while we wait for the perfect time to make a change.
Oh, yeah, we all do that, don't we?
Yeah, like, I'll start that project when I have more time.
When I have more money.
When I feel more confident. But those things can become barriers that prevent us from ever actually moving forward.
They can. And accepting change in this context is about taking responsibility for how we choose to move forward, even when conditions aren't ideal.
And that ties in with the idea of making progress through small steps, rather than waiting for some big dramatic overhaul.
Yeah.
Even if you only dedicate 15 minutes a day to a new goal, it all adds up.
Absolutely. It's about consistency. And the book uses this beautiful imagery of Japanese cherry blossoms, the sakura, and this concept of mono no aware to illustrate the beauty of accepting impermanence.
Oh, yes. That's such a lovely concept.
It's that Japanese sensibility that recognizes the beauty in things that are fleeting. And it helps us accept that nothing lasts forever.
Yeah, it's a reminder to appreciate the present moment. And then the book introduces this seemingly paradoxical concept of the Stockdale paradox.
Yeah, this one sounds counterintuitive at first.
It does. But it's essentially about holding two seemingly contradictory ideas at the same time.
Mm.
Maintaining unwavering faith that you will ultimately succeed no matter how tough things are right now, while also ruthlessly confronting the harsh realities of your current situation.
So it's not about blind optimism. It's about balancing hope with a realistic assessment of where you are. The book shares the story of Admiral Jim Stockdale, who survived years as a prisoner of war.
Great.
And he noticed that the prisoners who were overly optimistic, the ones who kept setting unrealistic expectations for when they'd be released, were often the ones who didn't make it.
Wow. Denying the reality of your situation doesn't help. Acceptance requires looking at the facts without sugarcoating them. But you have to hold that honesty alongside the belief that you'll persevere. And this leads into a really practical high AQ habit, the good advice test.
Okay, so tell us about that.
It's about learning to discern what advice is actually good for you. Good advice often makes us a little uncomfortable. It might challenge our beliefs instead of just telling us what we want to hear.
So it's about really considering whether the advice you're getting is pushing you to grow and leading to a positive outcome for everyone involved. Okay, so we've talked about how to engage with change and the importance of accepting it. Now let's move on to the third principle, which is to activate your optimism for the new.
Sounds good.
And this principle is so beautifully illustrated by the story the book tells about Andrea Clark's father and how he used a simple map to inspire his daughters to dream big and create their own future.
Oh yeah, that's a great story. It really shows the power of taking ownership and being proactive.
Right.
So principle number three is all about choosing to be an active participant in change. It's about channeling your energy and optimism towards those new possibilities and pursuing those paths that will lead you to where you want to go.
It's about creating that space to imagine what could be without limitations. And the high IQ habits that support this principle are really fascinating, starting with exploration over exploitation. The book uses this great analogy of bees.
Okay.
Bees are really good at balancing exploring new nectar sources with exploiting the ones they know are good.
Right.
And the book uses that to show the benefits of trying new things, even if they seem less efficient in the short term.
Right.
Because that exploration can lead to unexpected and valuable opportunities you might have otherwise missed.
I like that.
And then there's the habit of test the truth, which is really about questioning those practices and assumptions that we often take for granted. The book uses the example of how our attitudes toward going to work sick have changed so much since 2020.
Oh, yeah, that's a great example.
What used to be seen as normal or even admirable is now considered irresponsible. And it just shows how those ingrained norms can change and how important it is to question them.
Yeah. And then the book talks about the power of what-if scenarios,
yeah,
using Unilever as an example.
Right. Unilever started asking those tough what-if questions about the future demand for sustainable products, and it helped them prepare for a changing world and actually become leaders in sustainability.
And the book encourages all of us to run those what-if thought experiments in our own times and businesses.
Exactly, doesn't it? Because thinking about those potential challenges and opportunities can really lead to more innovative and strategic thinking. And then there's that amazing story about the Goldcorp challenge.
Yes,
yeah,
where a mining company took this incredibly bold step of releasing decades of their geological data to the public, offering a reward for anyone who could identify new drilling targets. And it totally paid off, didn't it?
It did. They ended up discovering millions of ounces of gold that they would have never found otherwise. It's such a testament to the power of challenging conventional thinking and tapping into a wider pool of talent and expertise.
It's so cool. And then the book brings up this idea of constructive destruction, using the backwards bicycle experiment to illustrate how hard it can be to unlearn those deeply ingrained skills and habits.
Yeah, even when you understand how something works on an intellectual level, it can still be so hard to rewire your brain. And that experiment really shows that. And it was so interesting how much faster kids were able to learn to ride the backwards bicycle compared to adults.
Yeah, it highlights how important it is to cultivate that adaptability and openness to new learning from a young age. And then the book introduces the high IQ habit of scroll back to look forward.
Oh, yeah, this is an interesting one. It's about gaining perspective by reflecting on past changes, both in your own life and in the world in general.
Right. So looking back at your social media history or old journals or even photo albums to see how your values and priorities have evolved over time.
It encourages you to ask yourself, have I been an active participant in shaping my own path?
I like that.
And the book also talks about the importance of having role models, and it encourages you to identify the people who inspire you both personally and professionally. And finally, under the Activate principle, there's this powerful self-reflection exercise called Run the Five L's.
Loved, loathed, longed for, learned, and let go.
Exactly. It's a way to assess your current habits and behaviors and your overall ecosystem. It helps you figure out what you need to let go of to make space for new energy and new possibilities.
Love that.
It's about taking a good hard look in the mirror.
Right.
And identifying what's driving you forward and what might be holding you back. Okay, so we've explored how to engage with change, how to accept it, and how to activate our optimism for the new. And now for that crucial final principle, release what's holding you back.
And this principle really emphasizes that actively shaping change and embracing new possibilities takes a lot of energy, not just physical energy, but also mental, emotional, and even spiritual energy.
It does.
And the book shares Andrea Clark's own personal experience with burnout as a reminder that we need to prioritize our well-being and let go of those unhealthy patterns.
It's so important to be aware of your own energy curve,
right?
To recognize your peak performance zones, but also those signs that you're approaching your limits.
And the book talks about the four key dimensions of energy, right? Physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual.
Yeah.
And it makes the point that if any one of those is out of whack, it can throw off your entire well-being.
It can. And sometimes we need to make those small moves in a long game to gradually shift our energy balance in a more positive direction.
Right.
The book also introduces this idea of optimizing your energy through positive rituals.
Like those small, consistent activities that help you recharge and reconnect with what's important to you.
Exactly.
And there are those great insights from elite athlete Rowie Webster about how important energy management is, even for people who are constantly pushing their limits. She talks about knowing your limits and having recovery strategies in place. And it all comes back to mindset, doesn't it? Our mindset is such a powerful tool for managing our energy and reframing challenges in a positive light. And the book ties all four principles back to Andrea Clark's own journey of leaving a demanding career to focus on her well-being.
It's a great example of putting those principles into practice. And then the book introduces Jamie Miller's framework of ecological resilience using the analogy of a ball in a bowl.
Okay, I love a good analogy. So break that one down for us.
So imagine a cube frozen in a block of ice floating in water.
Okay.
That represents traditional engineering resilience. The focus is on staying the same even when there's pressure. But a ball in a bowl represents ecological resilience, the ability to move and adapt to a changing environment. And I think the pandemic really showed us the limitations of those rigid systems and how important adaptability is.
Yeah, for sure. And Miller's point is that disruption can actually create opportunities for reorganization and innovation, which aligns with the four principles we've been talking about.
Yeah.
And then there's Schmaldas's perspective on leadership, which is really about relationships, trust, and understanding your own personal story.
He emphasizes the importance of character over just technical skills.
Mm.
And the book also addresses AI, which is so relevant right now. And it makes the point that you don't have to understand the technical details of AI to use it effectively. Mm. The key is to develop your critical thinking skills so you can apply it in a thoughtful and strategic way. Ultimately, the book is really about moving from reacting to change to anticipating it and even influencing it. And that requires flexibility, optimism, and a can-do attitude.
So just to recap our deep dive into ADAPT, we've explored why it's so important to pay attention to those early signals of change, to accept that change is inevitable, to actively embrace new possibilities with a positive attitude, and to let go of the things that are holding us back. And building your adaptability quotient, your AQ, is a journey. It's an ongoing process that can really help you navigate this world that's changing so rapidly.
It's an investment in your future.
Exactly.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.
And now we'd love to hear from you. Of those four principles we discussed, engage, accept, activate, and release, which one speaks to you the most right now? And what's one small step you can take today to boost your own adaptability? Share your thoughts and those aha moments in the comments below. And to wrap things up, let's leave you with this question. If you had a map of all the possible futures laid up before you, where would you choose to go?
And what would you do to be the pilot of your own journey in this constantly changing world?
Thanks so much for tuning in, and we'll see you next time for another deep dive. Don't forget to hit that like button and subscribe so you don't miss out.